Shula. You feel he should have set aside one ration that is particularly beautiful. All of them are beautiful. So yes, that's true, and it is Elul. But that being said, I think it's still safe to say that there's something special about Shabbos. Shabbos being, on the one hand, one of the most practical limudim that we have, something that's relevant to all of us every week, and yet highly conceptual, very much based on ideas and how they interact with each other, and really overlapping in a fascinating way. So there's endless depth and analysis to do within Shabbos, while at the same time it's something that we're putting into practice on a weekly basis, and it very much has to have a bottom line. And it's essentially all one sugya, which makes it a little bit challenging from a Gemara perspective, but also opening up fantastic avenues of exploration that you can't really learn Shabbos straight, especially if you want to accomplish a significant chunk of the Malachos in 1 year. If you had a few years, maybe you could do it. But if we want to get the major Malachos sugyas, so we have to skip around, unfortunately. And we start from the middle, so to speak. We start from our goal from today is to start from the Mishnah on Ayin Gimel, which I think you're all aware of. The marmakomos that were given out to the gods and you didn't get, again, that also should not be necessarily something that is necessarily intimidating if it seems long. On the marmakomos in general, I may sometimes make them long. I don't necessarily expect you to do everything on them. They're there for your edification. If you have time to read everything there, that's great. If it takes you a few days, that's also great. Essentially, because the schedule that we mentioned before, we probably have maybe 5 days of Seder with 3 days of things being prepared for it, from which you won't have Seder for it. So, you know, some of you start for shorter. If you have more time, sometimes it's worth reading the Maamar Kompas after Shir to see how things fit in. So you shouldn't, again, feel like that's something that's weighing down upon you. But if you saw the Maamar Kompas this morning, so you said, I will summarize the key points of what there is to see from that. So you saw that we're essentially starting from Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, which lists off the Malachos. So we could easily spend many months on introductions to topics of Shabbos. There are enough broad, general concepts that we could easily spend months talking about it. We're not going to do that. We won't spend months introducing the topic. Our basic aim is to jump right in. We really start today from the beginning and almost immediately to go into Malachos in order. And essentially, if you want to go in Malachos in order, that is roughly the same as starting from Ayin Gimel, because that's where all the Malachos are listed. And then the Gemara starts to talk at least about some of them pretty much in order. So we'll try to basically follow the order of the Malachos, which is essentially starting from the Gemara, with some of the more general ideas being woven into the various sugyas in which they come up. So hopefully through going straight to Gemara and covering these Malachos in order, we'll also get exposed to some of the more general ideas and the broader concepts, which would have taken us months in an introductory context. So what I want to do today is start from the Mishnah and draw out whatever introductory concepts we can from the Mishnah itself. And then, hopefully, we'll get a few basic introductory points that will lead us right into the first Malacha of Zareah, which we'll start next week. And we'll go straight from there. And before we start the Mishnah, I am committed to starting the Mishnah today. Before we start the Mishnah, I'll just say a few words of basic introduction so we know our terminology at least. And these are concepts that are listed on the Marmakoma sheet. Other Gemaras that are referenced there, I'll just give you a basic overview of what those other Gemaras were telling us. And we know that the Mishnah that we're going to start today, actually can start that before this introduction, the Mishnah starts off by listing the 39 Avos Malachos, which itself is already a strange concept. The idea of Avos literally meaning fathers, right? In this context, it means broad categories. So the concept that a halachic idea has Avos and Toldos, we find that in a few places in Halacha. Where else do we find this in Halacha? Nezikin, right? That's probably the most famous one. First Mishnah of Bava Kamma that we'll talk about, Arba Avos Nezikin, there are general categories in how you get down to them. Where else?
Shemitah.
Shemitah?
Tuma, a portion of property that owns a different one.
Right, so we find it in probably those three areas, in Nezikin, and in Tuma, and Shemitah, probably the three relevant other areas in which there is a concept of Avos and Toldos. But none of them really match the way it plays out when it comes to Shabbos. Shabbos here, we're defining a core prohibition. When it comes to Tuma and Nezikin, we're really talking about categories, not so much about actions. Shemitah is its own story, which maybe we'll come back to. When it comes to Shabbos here, we're trying to figure out what an Isser in the Torah is, a single Isser in the Torah. The Torah tells us not to do Malacha on Shabbos. And what that means is not spelled out. So we don't know what a Malacha is, and the Mishnah tells us that there are Avos Malachos, that there are these broad categories which tell us what constitutes a Malacha. And this idea that Avos refers to broad categories, it's interesting, there are those who maintain. That's also why we call the Sefer Pirkei Avos. We have the Masechet in Shas, which is about our character and our midos. We generally translate, there are many English books on Pirkei Avos, they all say Ethics of the Fathers. The Vilna Gaon and others understood that the word Avos is used like it's used here. It means these are categories by which your whole life gets organized. Pirkei Avos is about broad principles which everything else flows from. And there may be an additional meaning also, which doesn't really work so well for Shabbos. Rashi, in the beginning of Bava Kamma, when it talks about Avos Nezikin, so Rashi there says that the reason certain things are called Avos is because they're mentioned in Chumash. And the Vilna Gaon suggested, in terms of Pirkei Avos, said that's why Pirkei Avos is called that, because everything in Pirkei Avos, he understood, is actually traceable back to Chumash. He wrote a commentary on Pirkei Avos. Remember when I was a kid, I got a hold of the commentary of Vilna Gaon on Pirkei Avos. I was very excited. I thought they'd be opening Razzle Dazzle to Brit Torah. And then I read it, and he doesn't say any Razzle Dazzle to Brit Torah. He just quotes the words all the time. I didn't understand what the whole significance was. I only learned later that basically it's a thesis. He was proving how every mission in Pirkei Avos traces back to a puzzle. And that's why he's quoting Gemara, is that interpret Pesukim in ways that are consistent with what the Mishnayos are saying. He was showing how all the Mishnayos in Avos are basically coming from Chumash. So Rashi in Bava Kamma has this idea that an Avos is a term of something that's written in the Torah. But when it comes to Shabbos, so we don't have that. When it comes to Shabbos, the Torah doesn't spell out these Malachos. And up to Chazal to tell us, these are the 39 Malachos. So the Gemara is some of which you may have seen. The Gemara tells us a few concepts about defining this. First, if you saw the Gemara on Daf Ayin, the Gemara says that there's a concept of Chiluk Malachos, which is really how this parak starts off. And for those of you who are wondering what it's like to learn Yavamas, you see the rest of Yeshiva. So this is one sugya that Yavamas and Shabbos share. The sugya of Havara. What exactly does it mean? The Torah says, L'Sivaru Eish Kol Moshe Sefer. The Yom HaShabbos, why is it the Torah does identify one Malach? The Torah doesn't tell us anywhere, don't write on Shabbos, don't cook on Shabbos, don't plant on Shabbos, but it does say don't light a fire. So what's the significance of that? So the Gemara has a machlokas, both here in Shabbos and Daf Ayin, and the first part of the Gemara's, the unity sugya, that the idea is either that it's to show that Havara is somehow less of a prohibition, it's allowed, while every other malach of Shabbos is a chiyuv misa, or it's to say no, it's really to shed light, so to speak, no pun intended, on the rest of the malachos. That there is a concept of chiluk malachos, that the 39 malachos are essentially separate from each other. So what does that mean for them to be separate from each other? So as far as the Gemara is concerned, it means that I can do two different malachos, and it's as if I did two different averos in terms of punishment. And we're talking about misa, so it's not going to make so much of a difference. It can only be killed once. But if we assume that we're only talking about shogeg, inadvertent transgressions, so then we can count up karbanos, so different malachos are considered separate. There are many who understood that essentially what the Torah is doing
is it saying it's as if there are 39 psukim? It's as if there's a pasuk that says don't write on Shabbos, there's a pasuk that says don't plant on Shabbos, a pasuk that says don't bake on Shabbos. We can count it as if all those psukim are there for all intents and purposes. Which is a funny idea. And that's something we have to try to figure out. Why would the Torah do that? Why doesn't the Torah just make it 39 separate actions? Why doesn't the Torah have a positive? Don't write on Shabbos. Don't bake on Shabbos. Don't weave on Shabbos. Wasn't enough ink? Why doesn't the Torah just have a separate positive? That's something we have to try to think about. Maybe try to see if we can suggest an approach to it. What's the significance of this particular plan that the Torah took? Where it just tells us not to do malacha, and left it to Chazal to tell us what the malacha is, while also cluing us in that there are 39 of them. How do we know that there are 39 of them? So that the Gemara talks about here and also on Daf Mem Tes, if you got to see that, where there's a couple of possibilities. First of all, the Gemara seems to assume that we learn out the malachos from the Mishkan, that's the theme that we find coming up again and again. That the Mishkan is the source of the malachos. And then in terms of 39, so the Gemara has two choices in different places. Either it's a Gematria, right? Did anyone get to see that Gemara? What Gematria? Ela Hadbar. Right, which is a complicated gematria. How do you get 39 out of Eila Hadbar? Eila is 35, 36, right? Eila is 36, Bar gets another 2. Alright, so you get 39. Now, is that literal? Is that what we really learn from a gematria? It's a good question. Do we ever really learn anything from a gematria? It is an open question. Gematria is very popular from different Torah. And they're always very enjoyable. Are they really a halachic source? Not so clear. There's one place in Shas where the Gemara seems to learn a halacha from the Gematria. You know what I'm talking about? Tzitzis doesn't really have a halacha specifically, but Nziris. Is that Nziris over here? Okay, right. Stam Nziris Shloshim Yom. The idea that if I take a nether for be a Nazir, and I don't specify how long I'm going to do it for, so the Gemara says, if I don't say it, then it's 30 days. How do I know? Because the Torah says, Nazir Yiyah. So what's Yiyah? 30 Gematria. So it sounds like from that Gemara that there is this one din which is derived from a Gematria. Many of the Rishonim understood that even that's not the real source of the din, but Gemara is telling us how to remember it. We have a Masorah that a 30-day period is the basic period. It's not really derived from that Gematria. So what weight Gematria is really played in a lack of derivation is not clear. But at least the Gemara mentions that as one possibility. And the Gemara has another possibility as well. What's the other possibility in the Gemara? And we count up the words, which is also a question of questionable significance. How important is that? How many times a word is mentioned? But in any event, the Gemara gives that possibility as well. If we count up all the times in the Torah where you find forms of the word malacha, you get 39. And as Rishonim say, it's not really true. It's more than 39. You have to cut out some of them. You have to cut out the ones that are talking about a Kaddish Baruch Hu and my celebrations and the like. But if you cut out the right ones, you get the 39 usages of the word malacha. So perhaps you saw the Tosis over there and some of the other Rishonim. So they suggest that that opinion is not denying the Mishnah connection. Everyone agrees that the Mishnah plays a huge role. Everyone agrees that we derive the malachos themselves from the Mishkan. The only question is, one opinion of the Gemara thinks we could have figured out 39 from that also. We could have looked at the Mishkan, counted up all the actions, and we would have come up with 39. And the other opinion that's counting the words malacha, that opinion holds we wouldn't have done 39. We wouldn't have been able to look at these malachos and figure out which ones count and which ones don't. Because some malachos are very similar to each other. And we'll see as we go on in the Mishnah that there are some malachos which are almost indistinguishable. And it's only because we know that there are 39 and we look at the Mishnah that we can figure out that they're two separate malachos.
So the other opinion,
maybe we wouldn't have figured out 39 just from the Mishnah. So we need a separate source to tell us 39.
So we get the number from one place,
and the actual content of the Malachos from somewhere else.
So far, so good? And this is just basically an overview of what these Gemaras are pulling us into.
And then in terms of looking to the Mishkan,
so then that's a discussion as well. So the Gemara in the beginning of Kama,
we had a chance to see. So the Gemara there talks about Avos Nezikin.
And in the context of Avos Nezikin, it gets on to Avos Malachos.
And over there, the Gemara on that page says, what's considered to be an Av as far as Shabbos is concerned?
So the Gemara has an expression, that which was the Mishkan Chashiva.
What does that mean?
Sounds like it means it was important in the Mishnah.
So it's a little tough to read. So Tosfos over there in the bottom of the page, Tosfos says there's two ways to read this phrase.
Either it's two separate considerations, it has to be both in the Mishkan and Chashuv.
In other words, it could be that it was in the Mishkan, but it's still not significant,
and we're not going to count it.
Or it could be that the Mishkan is the definition of Chashivus.
Ad the Mishkan Chashivus. So there's some ambiguity how to read that Gemara, essentially telling us we look to the Mishkan for the sources of the Malachos. But it could be that not everything in the Mishkan counts. It has to be significant. It could be there's an act in the Mishkan that's not significant. It wouldn't necessarily make the cut as far as being an Av Malachos.
Now, it's also important to clarify that for our practical purposes in
2011, it makes almost no difference what's an Av and what's a Tolda.
And a Tolda is somehow derived from an Av, and
we'll talk about that in a little more
detail. But it doesn't really impact us because the practical halacha, Avos and Toldos, are almost indistinguishable.
They're both Isurim Daraisa.
They both carry all the consequences of Isurim Daraisa.
And rarely is there a practical difference.
We'll talk about whether it might be a practical difference. The real difference is mostly in the context of the Gemara,
because the Gemara talks about Onshin. The Gemara talks about if you have to bring a korban,
then you have to know how many korbanos you have to bring. So if distinguishing each other.
If you have two different avos, you have to bring two.
And if you did two actions, but one is a tolda of the same action that you did, so then that all counts as one.
So for us, it doesn't have much practical difference. We're not bringing karbanos. There's some svarim that point out that maybe there's an idea to give tzedakah to correspond to a karban, maybe it is something more to track of. But for the most part, it doesn't really impact us whether or not something is an av or a toldo, or really what category it is.
It's just when we figure out what is included,
so then we have to learn through the Gemara to find this terminology. So we have to have some background in what's going on, but for practical purposes, it really makes much of a difference.
So far, what do we know from the Gemara? We know 39 avos malacha.
They are somehow separated from each other, perhaps as if they are separate averos.
And they are derived from the Mishkan,
possibly only the important acts in the Mishkan. And the idea that there are 39 of them, that might also come from the Mishkan, or that might come from somewhere else. So far, so good.
And there's the Gemara Chagiga also, which is also on the list. We assume that the Gemara from various places outside of Shabbos are probably less likely to be seen. But the Gemara in the Mishkan, basically in Chagiga, makes the point about the abstract nature of Shabbos.
The Mishnah says that Hilchos Shabbos are kaharim ha'tzluyim b'sarim, like mountains hanging by a hair. Right? You can't really figure them out so easily, because in the Chumash, we have very little.
It's essentially the question that we opened with. Why is it in the Torah
we find very little elucidation as to what's a malacha?
And we have to look to the Torah Shabbat to tell us all the details. And
the Gemara over there, and Rashi, highlight a specific detail in Hilchos Shabbos. One is Lo'afka Shein Yishmit Magufo, which we'll talk about a little bit later on, so we'll not mention that right now. But the Gemara says the basic concept of Hilchos Shabbos that's going to affect all of Hilchos Shabbos that we don't really find in the Chumash. What's that? Malachas Machshavos. That is a defining element throughout all of the Hilchos Shabbos. There's a requirement that the malachos, in order to count as an actual malacha, have to reach a certain threshold. And that threshold is malachas machshavos. Now, we can't translate that term so easily, because as we'll see, there's much to discuss about what that phrase means. Machshavos, it sounds like it means a thoughtful malacha. It clearly draws on some level of intent, as Achronim have explained, it clearly does not only mean intent. We'll have to give more attention to what exactly it means. So we'll have to leave the term somewhat ambiguous. But there are at least 9 or 10 different halakos that are derived from this requirement. The halakos have to reach a certain threshold, not just happening, but they have to happen with a certain level of thoughtfulness, whatever that means, a certain level of machshavos. So how do we know that you need to have halakos machshavos? This major detail which halakha rises and falls from in the context of Shabbos, where do we know it from? Does the Torah tell us that? Does the phrase "Lachas Machshavos" appear in the Torah? Yes, but not in the context of Shabbos. Where does it appear? The Mishkan. So because we have this relationship between the Mishkan and Shabbos, we can look to the Mishkan and we can find out that the concept of Lachas Machshavos. That's what the Gemara is telling us in Chagiga. It's an unbelievable thing. Because here, this is such a major detail. This is the defining element of Shabbos. And we only know about it because we look to the Mishkan to find out rules of Shabbos.
What's the exact context of the Mishkan?
Well, it comes up a couple times in the context of the Mishkan. But the idea that the malacha that was done in the building of the Mishkan is termed malachas machshavos. So we figure out that, oh, in Shabbos, everything is derived from the Mishkan. So therefore, malachas machshavos is a requirement also. It's an unbelievable leap. That he is saying, who would have thought that such a major detail is so unspelled out in the Chumash itself?
Is that
in
connection with caused all the way to learn out that all the
avodah
from Mishkan? Is that like the
initial,
is that the connection?
Oh, so you raised an important question. Say all the avodah from Mishkan. So you're asking a very important question. So what exactly are the parameters for what we learn from Mishkan and what we don't? So that's a major machlokas. And also, it doesn't have that much of a practical difference. It has a difference before it gets to you. It has a difference in terms of how certain malachos are applied. What exactly does it mean to learn from the Mishkan? That affects just the concept of what we're starting with here. We start with the first Mishnah. So the first Mishnah, the first 11 malachos, are known as Sidur Depas. Sidur Depas because they describe the whole process of making bread. But, according to Rashi, pretty major Rishon, the whole expression doesn't really make sense. Why not? Because what does making bread have to do with the Mishkan? Mishkan wasn't made out of bread. That's it. Oh, so Lechem Apanim. So that's the way other Rishonim understand it. So Rav Haigon, for example, is quoted in the Tshuvas of the Rambam. Rav Haigon seems to be the major bar plukta with Rashi, and it's a major opponent. So that's what Rav Haigon says, lachem apanim. Well, we need to bake bread in order to do the avoda in the Mishnah. Why does Rashi not say like that?
That's it.
Oh, Rashi says, it's not about what you do in the Mishkan, it's about what you do for the Mishkan. So a malach is defined as that which is used in constructing the Mishkan. That's a fair question, and that gets to some of the hashkafa, which we'll maybe try to make room for on Thursdays. I try to talk about also. I think it's an important looming question in the background, and it very much affects this question also, because I think it's something to think about, and I'd like to hear your thoughts. Just to kind of throw this question out there: what exactly are Rashi and Rav Haigon fighting about? Are Rashi assuming that we're talking specifically about actions that went toward the building of the Mishnah,
Reb Haigal assuming that no, that things that are done in the Mishkan also count. And specifically, these first 11 that we'll start with, Sidur and the Pas, that's Melech Lachman. There is a Sefer that we'll be referring to very much. A very classic Sefer, even though it's a relatively recent Sefer, a Sefer called Egli Tal. Egli Tal was written not very long ago, it was written in the 1800s by somebody who lived in the 1900s, not exactly when he wrote it, but the Sachet Shavar Rebbe, familiar with the Sefer Shaios and Tshuvos Avnei Nezer, Sachet Shavar Rebbe was an unbelievable gong. Unbelievable gong. He wrote fascinating Tshuvos Ba'alacha called Avnei Nezer. And he also has another Sefer, which is devoted to Hilchos Shabbos. Not just Hilchos Shabbos at all, but just the Sidura of the past, the first 11 Malachos, so the Egli Tal wrote on, and he did an unbelievable job, because the relatively recent Sefer is less than 150 years old. If you look at the later literature, the Egli Tal is quoted as often as Rashi and Tosfos. It's one of the most cited Svarim you will see. It is left into the discussion with such a full force. It's very unusual for a Sefer written so recently. From a long bishop perspective, it becomes so accepted as part of the canon, so to speak. So Egli Tal, a very, very major sefer. Glad to get it, have a chance of it. It's not necessary, but it's glad to have it. Came out recently in a fancy edition with nice print and indexes. We also put in the back all the other truths in that edition on the later books. Very useful book. But the Egli Tal in his introduction, so he takes up this issue. He says, what exactly is the story? He says, the Machlokas, could be it's Machlokas between the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi. Machlokas Yerushalmi, how to understand the Bavli and Yerushalmi. It's basically three shittos, either this one shita is it is a Machlokas between the two Talmuds, another shita is that it's not a Machlokas and it's this way, and the other shita is not a Machlokas and it's that way. So essentially the question is, do we learn from the Karbanos included, do we learn from the things that happened in the Mishkan, or do we limit our limudim to that which was part of the construction of the Mishkan? So you see Rashi in our Mishnah, I highlighted on the Marmakomos, that the Mishnah lists Ofen, which itself is interesting. And when it lists off the Malachos, so the Mishnah talks about baking, and it doesn't mention cooking. And Bishul is a very, very prominent Malacha. We're actually going to have to figure out how to balance talking about this year without losing on all the other Malachos, because if you spend a year talking about Bishul, we'll have to figure that out in general, because Bishul and Hotzah are two Malachos which you can spend the whole year on, so we're not going to spend the whole year on those two Malachos. If we want to talk about the other 37, so you have to figure out how much to talk about those two. But Bishul is a very major Malacha, and it's not mentioned in the Mishnah. Bishul doesn't talk about Bishul. What does the Mishnah talk about? Ofer, baking. So that already tells you that these 39 slots, some of them contain more than one action. So essentially, and you'll see the Gemara is going to get into this more on the next Amud, but you see essentially that here, for example, so Ofe is number 11, there is 11a and 11b. Ofe and Bishul are two clearly related but different actions which share a slot. They're not separate malachos. They share the 11th slot on the malacha list. So Rashi talks about this. Rashi says, Ha'ofeh. Lo hava b'mishkan. Ha'ofeh did not happen in the Mishkan. Baking is not a part of the Mishkan. Why? Delo shayach el v'pas. The word baking, by definition, is talking about bread, cake, carbohydrates, things like that. The pas, lo shayach melechas ha'mishkan. Pas has nothing to do with melechas ha'mishkan. So clearly he's apparently never heard of lechem apanim so far. He's saying it's not a part of the melechas ha'mishkan to talk about bread. So why is it involved at all? So says Rashi, Kulu Kamaisa, all of these first malachos, what are they for? Having the Samanim Shal Tsevet Cheles Vargaman Vatala Shani. That these were all used in making the dyes for the Mishkan. The Paroches and the like had to be dyed with colors. So in order to get these colors, so you had to, some of them you had to get from vegetables, so you had to plant. So this whole process of planting and harvesting and then cooking them in order to get the right color and the right substance. So
So this whole process could also be used to obtain, if we trade Ofer for Bishul, the question in a second, if we trade Ofer for Bishul, so then this whole process gets us to making dyes out of vegetables. So that's why these first 11 melachos are here. That's what Rashi says. They're here not because of the lechem hapanim, because that's not part of constructing the Mishkan. They're here as part of the making of the dyes that went into the actual construction. Yes, sir?
I have two questions on that, Rashi. The first one is that if Rashi is trying to say that it's has to do with basically the binyan, the thing that you're not working with, why does he not say Oshaika the binyan of Mishkan? Why does he say the melech? Or does that apply to anywhere else?
So apparently he understands the word melech specifically. And melech, we're translating it nowadays as work. So you're saying anything that you do, especially because English, the way you would translate the word melech and the way you translate the word avoda would sound like the same. You translate them both as work. So then we translate back. It's like a Google Translate back into Hebrew now. So if we put melech and avoda into our Google Translate, both come out as work. Then we'll put work back into the reverse translator, and they'll come out as the same word. But apparently Rashi is saying, no, avoda and mikdash is one thing. The melech is hamishkan is what we build. And Rav Haigon will say, no, that the melech is a broader category, which will include this. So Rashi says, this is what I think the word melech means.
Then,
I think a second question. There's a question over here, then a question over here.
Also, if Rashi was trying to say that the primary would be all the stuff involving getting ready for mishkan, like cooking the dyes, and according to him, should the Mishnah specifically said special anatomia?
Yeah, that's what he's going to address. I haven't finished reading it yet. That's what he's worried about. He's saying, since it's the correct thing, so I have to explain why it is that the Mishnah uses the wrong word, so to speak. You go first.
Yeah. So does Rashi assume that they actually planted in the Midbar?
Oh, so that's another whole question. We'll have to talk about that, especially get to specific malachos. So then you get into other complicated things. So if you say, for example, Zorei is a malacha, and Zorei is learned by the Mishkan, so you're left with a big question on Rashi, which Svarim talk about, and we'll talk about it when we get to the specific malachos, because then what are you saying? You're saying, okay, so how did they make the Mishkan? Must be that they planted, because planting is a malacha, so all the malachos are learned out from the Mishkan, so it must be they planted. They planted in the Midbar, is that possible? Maybe. We'll talk about that, but maybe not. So then we have to figure out, apparently, you'd have to say that according to this, it means it could have been, if you were building a Mishkan today, this is what you would have needed. We'll mention where the computer fits in, but this is what you would have needed to do in order to fit into the Mishnah. So I think we have a question over here. Okay. Hi.
Doesn't Rashi say in the Mishnah, in regards to shearing, that they didn't actually shear the sheep, and they just taught it? But since the actual shearing was part of the process, so even if they taught the wool, that was still part of the blood. Can't you say that was plenty of just because they didn't necessarily plant it, but they actually bought the plant, but the plant was part of the process anyway.
Right, you're probably right, except that here there's maybe a little bit of a step beyond that. Because there, at least the concept of shearing sheep could exist, even if somebody else was doing it and they're coming in later in the game. But here, his question is, how did they plant at all? They're in a desert. This is not... It's a funny question also, because we'll see, we talk about Zerei, it'll be our first malacha, and then Koresh comes right after. It's a parallel issue. So if I were to go into a desert and plow the desert, it's probably not even an action of Koresh. I probably would not even be chayav for Koresh. So it's really a little bit of a funny derivation, because here we're learning out from what they did, so to speak, but apparently they couldn't have done actions that would have qualified as melacha. So you have to really broaden the picture that which would have been necessary in a normal context to make a Mishkan without divine assistance, that is what's defined as a melacha. So Rashi prefers to focus on what was there beforehand. And again, that's also an advantage to Rav Haigon. If you take Rav Haigon's view, you don't have any of these problems. So then things that happened after the Mishkan, that's where you're finding the definition. And those things actually were being done by the Jews. So it's much less problematic, according to him, which is probably part of why he likes that position. So Rashi continues and says that's where it all comes from. So the Gemara Parach the Shavik Kana Mevashel Rabbi Salamonin V'Nakat Ofer. So the Gemara is going to have to figure out why it is that the Tana then didn't do what says Rashi, what I would have thought made more sense. According to Rashi, it should have mentioned Bishul. Ofer was not even relevant, so to speak. And it's a strange choice. The Gemara is going to have to deal with that. So this is an interesting idea. So you see, Haigon has one out in a sense. that we call the Sidur of the Pots, according to Rashi, the whole concept of Sidur of the Pots doesn't really exist. The whole term is not relevant to Malachas HaNishan. So it's an interesting question, what exactly is motivating this Machlokes? And I'll throw that one out to you if you have any thoughts about this. Why is it that we should, once we accept that using the Mishnah as a model, which, as was already raised, is a fair question, really a Hashgafic question, which hopefully we'll have some opportunity throughout the year to look at it a little bit, if we're assuming the Mishkan is going to be the model, so where do we draw the line? Why should the Mishkan be limited to its instruction? Or why should it include also things that were done in the Mishkan? Why does Rashi say what he says, and why does Chaimon say what he says? There's a lot of literature about this, but most of the literature is bringing rayus from the Gemara one way or another, or bringing applications. It's very little that talks about why you would say one or the other, and I'm open to whatever suggestions. Want to make a suggestion about that?
And just for Rashi, in terms of the way people classically talk about the Malachos, it's usually talking about creative acts.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's talking about stuff that Hoda did in the Mishkan, so it's no longer creating the Mishkan.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that whatever philosophical concepts come with the Mishkan are probably more consistent with Rashi's idea. That it's easier to see that the Mishkan is the ultimate creative act, so therefore the making of the Mishkan, that's what Chil Shabbos is. Why would we extend it beyond that? So we have to try to figure out what exactly that story is. The one clue or suggestion?
No, I just don't exactly understand that. Why wouldn't the Avodah in the Mishkan also be created?
Because that's more of an ongoing process. The idea is that the Mishkan represents something being created. And perhaps we could say that the idea of Shabbos is don't create, and the Mishkan is the ultimate in creation. So the way the Mishkan was brought about, that's what you shouldn't do. So once it's created, we're talking about things after that, why that should be included, I'm not sure. One clue I can give you is that the Mishkan, if that's the construction of the Mishkan is our focus, so then we're interested in basically saying, this is what was done, and this is what you can't do. This was the ultimate in creation, and this is what Shabbos is not about. Not about doing is the opposite of this. While the Korbanos, that's a whole different story. Because some Korbanos were brought on Shabbos. You have a Korban Sibor, which is Mano Kavua. It's on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael, and it has to be done that day. So then the Korbanos are brought on Shabbos. So certain actions that are part of the Korbanos are done. So is our guideline something which specifically was not done on Shabbos? Because the built in the Mishnah was not permitted on Shabbos. The built in the Beis HaMikdash, in history, is not permitted on Shabbos. So maybe this represents a creative act which is specifically not for Shabbos. Or maybe it represents something which is allowed on Shabbos, but only in this specific context, only in the context of the Avodas HaBeis HaMikdash in those settings. So it's two different directions. I had to point it out. I'll leave it to you to maybe think of possible other angles to take within that discussion. Okay. So, any other questions before we look more directly at the Mishnah? So just to basically recap, what we saw from these various sugyas is that there are 39 avos malachos, if there is essentially one prohibition in the Torah, the don't do malacha. There's more than one prohibition, whether it's not necessarily. We don't have sukkah in each malacha. We have just the direction not to do malacha, and the one that's spelled out, havara. The Gemara tells us Havara, according to one opinion, according to the dominant opinion, Havara is there to teach us that the Malachas are distinct from each other. And some later Svarim took that further to say it really means they are all separate Averos. It's as if the Torah says completely separate. So, yeah. And the derivation, everyone agrees, at least they were shown in this one with Gemara, everyone agrees the derivation is from the Mishkan. And there's a Machlokas whether 39 and Malachos come from the Mishkan, or the Malachos come from the Mishkan, and 39 comes from somewhere else, either from counting up words, or from the Matra, or something like that. We saw that the Gemara says, the Gemara of the Kama has the phrase Mishkan Chashiva, and Tosfos notes two ways to read that, either the Mishkan makes it significant, or Mishkan V'chashiva, it's two different criteria, it has to both be in the Mishkan and be important in order to count. That we discussed the criteria of Malachas HaShabbos, this crucial aspect which is not spelled out and is derived from the Mishkan, and the Gemara in Tehillim is saying, that's amazing. That shows you that Hilchos Shabbos is like a mountain hanging by a hair. This huge detail of Hilchos Shabbos we only know from looking to the Mishkan. And then we saw a discussion, what does it mean to look to the Mishkan? Does it mean to to look to the construction of the Mishkan the way we probably would have guessed before we started with the debate, and that's the view of Rashi and others? Or is it about also the Avodah in the Mishkan, and that was the view of Rav Haigon, and that's where the whole expression Sidur of the past comes from, the notion that maybe bread is somehow relevant to the process because of Lassam upon him, because otherwise it would not have had any relevance. Rashi understands it. Okay. But it would also help for these problems because, for example, Samuel's question about how did they plant in the Midbar, so Rav Haigon gets the best of both worlds. The things that were actually physically done for the Mishkan, that counts as far as construction. And then the things that maybe weren't done, those who feel that it was done, if you assume that they didn't actually plan, but they did plan later on, so that's not funny, so then that still counts as well. So if we draw the Mishkan in a large sense, then anything that's a part of this Avodah eventually counts.
Eventually, the dyes also.
Right, so the dyes, if we already had the dyes from before, if we say they're all defined by the initial construction, so then, even if they were constructed again later, that still doesn't mean it's kind of things that were, for example, if you can make up a malacha that was part of being based on mikrash and not part of the mishkan, theoretically that wouldn't make the cut. It's all about this initial mishkan construction. So that's the difference which in the design. So this leaves us also with an important question that we want to try to figure out. And we'll try to address it a little bit. Why did the Torah do it this way? Why did the Torah just say, don't write on Shabbos, don't set fires on Shabbos, don't bake on Shabbos? Why didn't the Torah just give us 39 seconds? It might have been one pasuk for 39 words. Why did it leave us to this path, saying, don't do malacha? And by the way, wink, wink, that means 39 things. And by the way, here's the Mishnah to look, figure out the 39 things. But as far as what we're going to tell you, it only means don't do malacha. Why do we have that kind of a structure? So it could be we could get a little bit of insight and some further ideas. So what I'd like to do now is start the Mishnah, but continue our introductory discussion. And we'll see, again, we don't want to do all of the introductions to Shabbos that we can do because it will never actually start the Malachas. Our intent is to start Zoreya very soon. But there are certain introductory themes that come out from reading the Mishnah itself. I'd like to note the following. I don't know if you had a chance to look at the Rambam that was on the Maran Kamos, but I brought one here for you, so not to worry. So the Mishnah lists off the malachos. And so how does the Mishnah start off? Avos malachos. So that's what we talked about till now, the concept of avos malachos. Arboim chaser achas, 40 minus 1. So we started talking about that. So those first five words of the Mishnah we've discussed now, the concept of avos, concept of malacha and it being 39. So now the Mishnah lists specific malachos. Ha-zoreya, ve-ha-choresh, ve-ha-kotzer, etc., etc. It lists off 39 malachos in that form. If you look at the Rambam in the beginning of the 7th parak of Hilchos Shabbos, the Rambam says, malachos, shechayovin alein skila b'karyos t'mezid or karb mechatzis p'shkaga, the malachos that you are liable for punishment for, whether it's skila, akares, or karbanos, mehen avos, mehen toldos. There are some that are avos and some that are toldos. Uminyan kol avos malachos avarim chaser achas, and there are 39 of them. Ve'eluhen, hacharisha, v'hazria, v'haktsira. You notice the difference? What's the difference?
One the action and one the person.
Ah, very good. Excellent. So the Mishnah says, Mishnah talks about a person, Hazareya, the planter, the Hachorish, the plower, the Hakotzer, the harvester. And the Rambam lists actions, Harisha, Zriya, Tzira. We won't focus on the fact that he switched the order also, the Gemara talks about that, but leaving aside the switched order. So, very correctly pointed out that he talks about actions as opposed to a person. Is that a significant difference? Would that keep you up at night? That bother you at all? So perhaps it wouldn't bother you at all. If you're the Magid Mishnah, it would bother you. Magid Mishnah notices this. Magen Mishnah, the side of the page of the Rambam, the Magen Mishnah comments that that's a difference that's interesting. That the Rambam lists actions, Zriya, Harisha, Ketira, and the Mishnah lists people. Is there any way to explain the difference? What do you think? Any suggestions? Mike?
The example that we have from the Torah is negotiation series one to
so that's one of the
Mishnah is following the example of the Torah.
Okay, that's one example, though. And that's not necessarily a definitional example. That's going to be a big part of our discussion, so we get after some of the malachos, but I don't know if that's significant enough to guide us in all the malachos. But is there anything else the Mishnah might be getting at, for contrast to the Rambam? Corey?
The Mishnah is dealing with, you mentioned this in regards to punishments, so you assume people who were doing the action, the Rambam was just counting the actions, was just trying to list us in the malachos themselves.
That's interesting. It's possible. He's saying if the Mishnah is focused, like the Gemara often is, right? The Gemara, a lot of the times when it introduces action on Shabbos, it talks about in the context of whether somebody's chayav or patur. So maybe the Mishnah, having that focus, the Mishnah talks about people who are guilty of something. While the Rambam doesn't introduce it that way. The Rambam says these are what malachos are. So he can list off malachos as action. It's interesting. It's a valid suggestion. Hi?
God is giving more struggle for us that the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to feed these type of people, so you normally are someone who chefs on Shabbos or not. Whereas to Rambam says, well, you're not allowed to do these actions.
The Mishnah is going further. The Mishnah is saying, don't have the status of somebody who does this. Like you find as a
Shabbos or somebody who did
it. Right, and there's somebody who is a liar and there's somebody who's lying. If you lie once, you're not necessarily a liar. You lie all the time. And the Mishnah is saying, don't be a liar. Don't be a thief. Don't be a zoreah. Could be. Possible. See?
No.
Okay, hi.
Maybe we should see him as Nizid. So he's doing it as showing it to every individual Malacha, whereas the Mason would be just, whatever you do, you just hire for that one Israeli because you're going to get
it. Interesting. I don't know if this can explain the difference. And also when it comes to Mason, theoretically he doesn't have a distinction because don't get killed once, but still there is a distinction in love. It's an interesting idea. So, hi.
You also wouldn't be able to get a noun from something that you've done. So, the Rambam, it doesn't matter. Not only aren't you allowed to do it, but not only are you not allowed to use a noun, you're also not allowed to get a noun from Israel. So,
that's an interesting question. So, we'll have to talk about that a little bit. What exactly is the significance of Hana? So an important thing to realize is, and we'll talk about this because it directly affects this, is that that's actually not Mr. Doraisa for the most part. So it's hard to say that that's the context. So we have to see if that's really what's going on here. So one suggestion that's offered to explain the Mishnah and the Rambam deviating from each other is that of the Magen Avos. Magen Avos is also a sefer which you'll hear about a lot. A lot of svarim are written on the malachos. One great Afron who's probably best known for the sefer, his name is Reb Mordechai Benet.
He lived in the 1700s. And he wrote a number of other svarim as well. He wrote a discussion of malachos called Magen Avos,
where he says, you know why the Rambam and the Mishnah phrase it differently?
It's significant. Because there is a concept
which we'll have to talk about in more length, and I will just mention it. It's a concept called malacha shein hatzricha legufa. Now let's say I do a malacha, and I am lacking purposeful intent somehow.
I'm saying that vaguely because there's a whole machlokes b'shalom and what exactly is the definition of malacha shein hatzricha legufa.
But let's assume that it means,
for example, in the Mishnah they did it for this purpose. If I do it for a different purpose, that doesn't make a cut.
That's called the malacha shein hatzricha legufa.
So we assume mahalacha that a malacha shein hatzricha legufa is part.
Somebody who does the malacha, that really is the malacha, but his intent is different.
He is on a Torah level of he's generally Yisr Darabana, but it's not going to be considered the Yisr Daraisa in its primary form. Say again, sorry?
No one using a hammer to crack a coconut.
It's not coming from a different angle, it's a little bit later, but that's because it's not the normal way of doing it. Now here, Lakshman Smith would look a little bit more if you do the action. An example might be, it's hard to give you definite examples because everyone's controversial, but let's say, for example, we'll talk about in the context of plowing. So digging is related to plowing. But let's say you're not digging because you want the hole. You're digging because you want the dirt you're getting out of the hole. So you're doing the identical action, and your intent deviates from the Mishkan's intent. Not all Rishonim understand that way, that's why I'm being a little vague, but for now we'll take that definition. That your intent, the action is the same, but your intent is different. So we hold the halacha, your cut. That in order for you to make the cut, it has to be with the intent of the Mishkan. But the truth is that the machlokas in the Gemara. And the Rambam actually passes against us. The Rambam actually holds that a melacha shein yitzrich legufa is chayav. That intent does not play a large role. So it says with Mordechai Benet, that's what's going on here. With that introduction, can we explain the difference? Why would the Mishnah say one way and the Rambam say another way? We want to fill in the blanks. Yes, sir?
Because the Mishnah is talking about somebody who had the proper kavana. So on Zoraya, the proper kavana is high. The Rambam, it doesn't matter, since you're only one option. But it's not a problem to say because the Rambam would be arguing against the Mishnah.
Well, the Rambam is already arguing against the way we possibly have to assume that, according to this explanation, that the Mishnah is trying to cover everybody. So the Mishnah is acknowledging both opinions. That's the way Mordechai Benet says it. That the Mishnah wants to cover all opinions. So according to one opinion, that Melacha Shein Yitzrich LeGufa is Pater, which we happen to follow, but in the Gemara it's an opinion. So the Mishnah wants to cover everybody, so it uses a language that accommodates everybody. While the Rambam will take a side on this, so he uses a language that fits his conclusion. But the idea basically being that the Rambam believes the action has significance in itself. So the act of Harisha, for example, the act of plowing is going to be plowing regardless of what your intent is with that act of plowing. So therefore, he's listing Harisha, that's significant. Well, according to the Mishnah, if the Mishnah wants to cover everybody, so there's an opinion in the Mishnah, which again we have to follow, that intent is crucial. So therefore, we have to talk about Hachorich, the one who is plowing with the intent to be plowing like a Mishkan, and not necessarily just an act of Harisha, which might not have that impact.
The Rambam also a lower level from the
Lachat Macheves. So you have to figure out that the Rambam clearly acknowledges Lachat Macheves, so why is it that that comes out differently in his Chita? We'll have to talk about that in its proper place. But Lachat Macheves, again, being a very broad category which affects a lot of areas, we'll give it its proper attention and see how the Rambam fits in with it. So that's how Rav Mordechai Benet, the Magen Avos, suggests. There is another suggestion as well. And we'll probably just get to start this, and we'll have to continue on Sundays. Again, tomorrow will be a Parsha day. And they want us to dive in and set together the main base measures. So we'll try to finish in general probably 2:27 or so to give us time to get to the... It's 2:33 when we start now. So we've got 6 minutes to get there. And I think we'll continue on Sunday with this discussion. Tomorrow will be a Parsha day. So essentially, there is another suggestion, which doesn't focus so much on the Rambam, focuses just on the choice of words in the Mishnah. And this suggestion opened up a whole barrel of worms. There's a whole fight that affects a lot of Hilchos Shabbos. And may also give us significant clues in understanding why the laws of Shabbos are set up the way they are. Suggestion to read the Mishnah this way was made by Rabbi Yosef Engel. Yosef Engel was a great Talmudist of the past century. He's a tremendous gaon. The author of this sefer, Asven Daraisa, lived in Krakow. He wrote fascinating essays. So he makes the following suggestion, which he himself doesn't like. He suggests that it could be related to a major fight in Yemen. Very controversial point. It goes as follows. There's a question that some of our opponents asked. We have a din d'rabbanan called Amira L'Akiva.
And if I ask a non-Jew, non-Jew is not obligated to keep Shabbos, not even really supposed to keep Shabbos. However, if I ask a non-Jew to do malacha for me, that's prohibited. If he wants to do malacha for himself, there's a thing. If we ask him to do malacha for us, that's prohibited. That's prohibited in our Torah, or prohibited in the Rabbanan? Sorry? The Rabbanan, right? That's generally understood. The Gemara has the expression, Amiro Akum Shvus. Shvus is a word we use for within the Rabbanan. That essentially, it's a rabbinical prohibition. The suggestion seems to be that Min HaTorah, if I ask a non-Jew to do malacha for me, that Min HaTorah I'm not doing anything wrong. The rabbis had to come and forbid it. So some of the Achronim asked, again, I don't want you to get hung on my name so much, but the Pnei Yoshua asked this question. Pnei Yoshua, not the one who made it come across in the Gemara, the commentary in the Gemara, the Pnei Yoshua was the grandson of the Tshuvas Pnei Yoshua. Older Sefer Pnei Yeshua, Pnei Yeshua, so there a look on the title page of the Pnei Yeshua on the Gemara, it has a subtitle there, it's called Ape Zuta, which means small face. He considered himself a small opponent, a small face, because his grandfather was the big face, his grandfather was the Pnei Yeshua. So the Pnei Yeshua on the Gemara is the grandson of Tshuva's Pnei Yeshua. So Tshuva's Pnei Yeshua asked the questions. Why do we need a Din D'Rabbanan not to tell a non-Jew to move on? Why isn't it Mr. Deraisa? Now we know we have a concept called shlichus in the Torah. Shlichus sholadam kamosa. If I appoint someone to do something on my behalf, it's as if I did it. So, you'll say maybe shlichus doesn't work for a non-Jew. However, there is a strong opinion, and there may be proofs in the Gemara, that that's only true. Lakula, if you want to do a mitzvah through the shlichus of the non-Jew, maybe that doesn't work. But maybe to be machmir for a prohibition, maybe there is some concept of shlichus for a non-Jew. That's what he's working on. He's working on the concept that there could be shlichus for a non-Jew. So says the Pnei Yeshua, why do I need a din d'rabbanan? It's an issur d'oraisa. I can't have him act on my behalf. He doesn't know the answer to the question. In later generations, Chassam Sofer and others, the base mayor, again, don't worry about the name so much, but others explain. They think they know the answer to the Pnei Yeshua's question. And Chassam Sofer and the base mayor suggest that there is no such concept of shlichus when it comes to Shabbos. When it comes to the malachos of Shabbos, there's no such reality to having somebody else do a malacha on your behalf. Concept doesn't make sense. Why not? So there are various ways of saying it. But many of them point to the following pasuk in Parshas Vayeshlach. This is part of the Aseret HaDiburos. So as part of the Ten Commandments, the Torah tells us, Shamor Yisrael B'Shabbos L'Kadosh. And we know the difference between the two sets of the Aseret HaDiburos, that in Yisrael we're told Zachar Yisrael B'Shabbos, and in Vayeshlach we're told about Shmir HaShabbos. And the difference is, Shmir HaShabbos is the malachos. And that observing Shabbos is not the malacha, while Zachir HaShabbos, Parshat Yisrael, that's Kiddush and possibly more, at least Kiddush. So the malachos only come up in one of the two sets of malachos in Vayeshlach. So this, one could argue, this is the key definitional section. Here the Torah talks about Shabbos elsewhere as well. But maybe this is a good place to look if I really want to know where does God really hit home the idea of Shemir Shabbos in Vayeshlach. What does it say there? If you want to write it down, this is Hey Yud Gimel. Sheish Yisgam and Tavo Yassis Makom Malachem. Okay, next pasuk is Dalet. V'yom Hashvi Shabbos Hashem Elokecha V'otzasa Chol Malacha Ata Uvinichu Vitecha V'atach V'yamaska V'sharecha V'chaborecha V'chol Be'atecha V'yerecha Shir V'sharecha L'man Yanuach Avtocha V'yamaska Kavocha. What did these Achronim focus on? What is the whole end of the pasuk? Sorry? What's everything getting at? You shouldn't do malacha, not you or anybody, anything to do with your household.
none of you should be doing any malacha. Why not? What's the end of the pasuk? L'man yanuach. Then you should be at rest. And your household should be at rest like you. The idea being, don't do malacha, so you should be at rest. The Acharonim suggest, what does it mean not to do malacha? It means to be at rest. It means that you, the individual, should not be doing an act of malacha. So therefore, says the Samsofer, says the Beis Meir, there's no such thing as shlichus on Shabbos, because if I have somebody else do malacha for me, okay, so malacha has happened, but I'm still at rest. I have not violated Shabbos. Shabbos is defined by my being at rest. That's what Shul Shabbos is. So if I ask a non-Jew to do malacha for me, shlichus shalom k'moso, that's great. Doesn't matter. I brought about this malacha. It doesn't matter. The fact is, I am at rest. I am in fulfillment of the pasuk. That's the question. Okay, so that's what they suggest. This is a definitional principle when it comes to Shabbos. That the definition of malacha is to not be at rest. And if you are at rest, even if you are bringing it out of malacha, you are still not in violation of the din of the Torah. So therefore, these Achronim understand that it's conceptually impossible to have shlichus when it comes to Shabbos. And that's why, to answer the Pnei Yeshua's question, that's why we need a Din Rabbanan to have a Bir Lachot, because the Torah by itself didn't tell us that there's anything wrong with having this non-Jew do it. Yes?
Why is that different than a normal Isser? Say, if you tell somebody to steal something for you, you're not the one doing your Neva.
Right, so very important question. So apparently, what they're laying out here is that there are other Averos which are about the effect. Talk about stealing, so if I take away your stuff, that's really the issue. The issue is that your stuff has entered into my possession. So if I take my hand and use your stuff, use my hand take your stuff, or I have my henchmen take your stuff, end of the day, it's the same thing. Your stuff moves from your property to my property. Apparently, the chiddush here, it's not an obvious idea, the chiddush here is that Shabbos is not about that. You thought Shabbos was about not having food get baked, or seeds get planted, or letters get written. It's not. It's about you are not writing. It's about you are not baking. It's about you are not planting seeds. But if it happens, even if it happens because of you, that's not a violation of Shabbos.
Yes, sir. Can that explain why the Mishnah writes?
That's what Rabbi Zvengel wanted to say. Says that's the Mishnah. So the Mishnah, which talks about Ha Zareya, Ha Choresh, Ha Kozer, why does it use that language? Because maybe it's reflecting that view, that we're not concerned about Charisha or Zriya. We're concerned about Achorish. We're concerned about Hazareya. If you somehow manage to bring about Charisha without doing anything, you're not in violation of Shabbos. So you have a non-Jewish friend plow for you? So this is Rabbanan. Because as far as the Torah is concerned, that's not an act of Charisha. Everyone follow so far? Right?
That means any action
you
do, you're not resting, you're working.
If
you're not resting, you're working. It doesn't matter what, it's still working.
But here you're saying you're not working. Let's say if I'm plowing and someone's working, but if I'm sitting on my couch and I tell my non-Jewish friends to plow for me, so I'm not working. So apparently what this approach is saying is that the fact that you made your field get plowed doesn't concern us. All right, so it doesn't address that. Now, you could say that maybe the Rambam disagrees with this whole approach, which is possible, but we don't know that yet. So for now, his approach is different than the approach you mentioned before. It focuses more on why the Mishnah uses this word rather than why the Rambam deviates. It could be that it fits into the same pattern. And there are those, as far as I came later, that suggest that these are all related ideas. And the reason Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is Pater is because we're interested in your connection to the act. So it's not two separate answers, really the answers are connected. It's the same idea that the Mishnah is reflecting two things, that we're interested in the individual rather than the action. And that's why Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is Pater. And maybe the Rambam disagrees with both. It could be. So that was a whole firestorm. That was a whole non-focus. There are those who accepted this principle. There are those who didn't accept this principle. And it had tremendous impact, and has tremendous impact, on practical halakha, and could possibly be a clue to why we view the malachos the way that we do. So in order to see how that all comes together, we'll have to continue, God willing, on Sunday. Just to quickly recap before we go to Mincha. So what have we learned so far? So we learned the basic principles from the Gemara, the idea of 39 malachos, malachos coming from the Mishnah, the idea of malachos being separated in actions, the idea of 39 either coming from words, gematrias, or from the Mishkan. Mishkan and Chashivas possibly being two separate criteria. Malachas and Hashemes being an example of how abstract Shabbos is in the Torah, as the Gemara Tehillim tells us. The Machlokas between Rashi and Haigon is the one of the stories of Malachas, the construction of the Mishkan, or the Avod in the Beis HaMikdash. And then we saw this Mishkan, which lists off the Malachas as people rather than as actions, the way the Rambam does. We saw two suggestions, either the Magen Avos, who says that it's about Malachas Shemetricha L'Gufa, that the Mishnah is assuming that that could be Pater, or is Pater, and therefore it's acknowledging it has to be about the individual, while the Rambam, who believes it higher, the Rambam is more interested in actions. And we mentioned the Joseph approach, which is what we're going to focus on next week, that this reflects an approach to a certain path, in the Al-Roman, controversial path, that Shabbos is all about the individual being at rest, Laman Yanuach, as the Pasuk tells us. So therefore, there's no conceptual possibility of Shlichus. You can't have Malacha happening if you are not working. It's not significant. So the Mishnah emphasizes that by saying, we don't care about Karisha, we don't care about Zuria, we care about Acharesh and Hazareh. So that, as Hashem, will continue on Sunday. Tomorrow, we can continue learning about this in the morning, and Rashi will talk about Parsha Shoftim and the related topics. So have a fantastic day. If anybody has any problems or issues, please feel free to talk to me, and it should be hopefully a wonderful semester. Yes.
This computer's dying.